This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna Spingola, and our guest today is Carl Radl. That's R-A-D-L. His website is called Semitic Controversies, and that is semiticcontroversies.blogspot.com. And, Carl, you were talking about the differences between Trotsky, and mentioned that Stalin was basically a thug that robbed banks and a lot of other things. So how did Lenin play into all of this? I always understood he was the more brutal one, and that Trotsky was kind of subtle, and he wanted to just slip in and kind of get into the government of various places and do it subtly. Am I wrong?
In a sense, yes. In a sense, no. You're right in how Trotsky was operating. Trotsky was a big proponent of the Internationale, the Third Internationale that was set up in Moscow in 1917, 1918, to propel the ideas of communism out to the world. In this, from about 1970, from the founding of the Third Internationale to about 1936-37, it was a highly idealistic organization. It was very keen on this idea of the of what we call democratic centralism, which is basically everyone has a voice in how it's done. But once it's decided, everything we don't sort of disagree from there. But it's just in that initial period, everyone has a debate. But Trotsky was very much a man, very much Lenin's hitman, as well as Russia. As well as Stalin. He was one of the generals of the Red Army. He was responsible for numerous massacres in Russia during the Civil War. In fact, he was notorious for killing other Jews, interestingly enough. They targeted the religious Jews, particularly. And he, if you like, was every bit as brutal as Stalin. It's just that he was a less sage. He wasn't a, should we say, he was much more of a threat, or seemed to be, than Stalin was. So Stalin allied himself with two other Jews, Zinoviev and so forth, and managed to sort of oust Trotsky from the party, and then eventually sent him into exile. And in many respects, Stalin continued to be worried about Trotsky that entire period. He went to a great length to have him killed in 1940 with a pickaxe in Mexico.
Yes.
It was, if you read the literature of the time, you find that they're both very very paranoid about each other, because Stalin hated Trotsky. Trotsky hated Stalin, essentially, because whoever had won the battle would have taken power, and that was the kind of key to understanding it. But we also have to realize that Trotsky was no shrinking violet. The man advocated killing people whenever the Soviet Union took over. He would go in and wipe out the bourgeois, and then look for what they call B-class elements, bourgeois who are willing to be traitors to their own class, etc., etc. And then they would, he would essentially organize the mass murder. Exactly the same thing that Stalin would do later in Poland, in Katyn, in Latvia, Lithuania, which led to the Einsatzgruppe of Germans being so well received that the Lithuanians were going around battering Jews with planks of wood, because they hated them that much for what they did. Same basic principle with what you had in the Ukraine and in Russia itself. This kind of dichotomy between the two of them was created by Trotsky's partisans, really. But there you go.
Alrighty. Okay, we do have to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors, so stay tuned.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Welcome back. Carl, what do you think of the Black Book of Communism as crimes, terror, and repression?
It's an excellent work. The reason I say it's an excellent work is because it has received an awful lot of attacks from academics. If you go and have a look at it on, say, Amazon.com, you'll find that there's numerous authors, there's academics on there trying to attack the book, who stated, for example, I remember one case, stated that the numbers included in it were not verified by academic literature and so on and so forth. This is not uncommon. In many ways, it's a great book because Stéphane Courtois, who wrote it, he pointed out very poignantly that you cannot you can't just apply two different standards to two different supposed sets of atrocities. For example, you can't say that if with the Germans in World War II, that all of a sudden anything can be believed, which is basically how they work, how Orthodox Holocaustians tend to work, as I'm sure the guest who was based on yesterday would have told you, Veronica Clark. But in the case of the Soviet Union, it has so many partisans who will demand every measure of proof they can possibly think of to defend their the homeland. It's essentially what the current Marxist scholar, I can't remember his name now, there's a Slovenian Marxist scholar who's very, very famous at the minute. He said very, very poignantly that that a lot of Marxist scholars have historically and currently they have said, okay, I'm a Marxist, I'm a revolutionary, Slavoj Žižek, that's his name, he argued that if people believe in communism, they should live communism. They should not just sit in a what you call a capitalist country and say and attack and say my heart is in Russia, my heart is in Venezuela, my heart is in Cuba, and so on and so forth. That was his point, and it's a very valid one because you tend to have a tendency to find, as Stefan found, that you can't is that these people will attack you. But they have no experience of communism. They will just defend it on a theoretical basis that it's the better society and so on and so forth. The numbers included in his book are correct, as far as I can see. Perhaps a little exaggeration on the plus side. But, for example, the figures given for the citation of the Holodomor, the Ukrainian famine, are completely correct, in spite of a lot of claims that they're not. They're based on Ron Quest, who's an excellent scholar, book on the subject, The Gruesome Harvest, in which he postulated a 13 million casualty toll that Stalin took in just a few years in the USSR, in Ukraine, and he did so deliberately. He has recently, in private correspondence with both myself and others like Frank Ellis, who's another anti-communist historian of Russia and Marxism, said that he put it down to about 11 million people that were killed by Stalin, but no lower than this. In a recent book, for example, a man named Timothy Snyder claimed that no one had put it above 2 million, and then cited Conquest, which is in Conquest's own book, which put it at 13 million. As if that had backed up his argument. It's just this kind of deceptive behaviour when it comes to Soviet atrocities that Courtois is kind of trying to counter with his book, and I think he's succeeded to a large degree in spite of all the abuse that's been thrown at him. I think he's done very well, and he's to be commended for it.
Now, how many actually starved in the Ukraine in 32-33?
32-33 depends on who you believe. We're talking a couple million, possibly. We use the toll up to about 1930s as a rule, because it's very hard to separate out the death tolls in these periods because Russian statistics are notoriously being horrendously bad. Because the Russians essentially conformed to the Marxist premise that whatever was beneficial to the revolution and would be believed would be the fact, would be the statistic. Because if you did not, that you were guilty of counter-revolutionary sentiment, spreading disaffected propaganda, and so on and so forth. So you tend to have this problem with statistics. We include the 36 area as well, because of all the killings that went on in Ukraine, particularly against the kulaks. The kulaks, the farmers who had profited from Lenin's new economic program, and so on and so forth, that Stalin decided all of a sudden he wanted to get rid of, and killed them, because they, again, were the people who suffered for through the Holodomor. But another interesting side to the Holodomor is the role that Soviet theory played in it, because you had a chap named Lysenko, as he was a quack plant geneticist, a botanist, who claimed that he could revive what we call the Markian theory of genetics, whereby rather than in Darwin, you have inherited characteristics cannot be influenced by your environment. He claimed that Lamarck was right, that inherited characteristics, so say, you know, if you were born with something, it could be changed if you're exposed to ice water or something like that for a long period of time, and would change this. So he gave this idea of this winter wheat that would supposedly help, you know, it would give a double crop and so on and so forth, that was planted that year. And predictably, it failed completely. the Soviet Union authorities didn't really know what to do. They didn't have enough of an infrastructure to be able to deal with that. So Stalin literally just said, okay, just let them all starve, pretty much, in that period.
Oh, my.
It was horrendous, horrendous time. And it's not usually known, but the American government gave them grain, much as they did during the Second World War. They, one recent author, for example, has pointed out, his name is John Mosier, he's at Ignatius College. He argued that if Stalin had not been given all this food in both periods, and during the Holodomor and so on and so forth, and during the Second World War, by the United States of America, he would not have survived as a dictator, and all the carnage that could have been avoided. And Roosevelt plays such a big responsibility in all this because he gave Stalin all this aid that he didn't need to give him. He even started the war for Stalin pretty much in 1941, 1942.
Right, with
Lend-Lease. Yeah, it was unprecedented in any form to give that much aid to a power which you know is opposed to you and you know wants to destroy everything the United States, wants to take over the United States and has espionage networks, because we know Hoover was telling him that the communists in the United States were incredibly powerful and have incredible amounts of followers. And, if there wasn't any followers in the United States, where did the espionage networks that were heavily Jewish that discovered in the 1940s and 50s come from? You have nuclear espionage networks. You have the ones near the White House. You have what we call the Ware Group, which were responsible for all sorts of things coming out. You have the Alger Hiss trials, and you have Judith Capon's another one. You have this entire massive espionage network in the United States helping Stalin, helping his policies along in every way possible they could, and rationalizing it all the time with the kind of books that were put out by the international publishers and so on and so forth about how wonderful Stalin was, about how it was necessary to go to the Great Society and so on and so forth. And it's one of these things, you look at it and you wonder, how do people not know? First of all, Jewish involvement. Second of all, how bad Stalin was as a person. Because we hear so much about the 6 million Jews, but we hear nothing about, say, the 13 to 11 million Ukrainians. It's a special day of history to those of us in it. But to the rest of the world, as far as they can tell, it almost didn't happen. And it's quite incredible, really, that you could hide that many millions dead.
Now, didn't the communists also take a lot of power through the early unions in the early 1900s?
Yes, they did. That's quite right. They did. They had a lot of friends in the early unions. Again, you have a lot of figures in the unions who were who you wouldn't think of being Jewish, but were. Like, for example, the garments union under Sidney Hill. He was Jewish, but he actually opposed communism for quite a long time. And you had the Longshoremen's Union under Harry Bridges, who wasn't Jewish, there was another union I can't remember the name of right at the moment, under the nephew of Solomon Lozanovsky, who was head of what we call the Profintern. Again, something people wouldn't have heard of. The Profintern was essentially the international Red Political Prisoners Association. So it was to send money, propaganda, plus, and help aid people to escape of anyone who was a prisoner in the service of the Soviet cause. And you had Solomon Lozanovsky, who was a major figure in the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee, and so on and so forth, involved in that. His nephew ran a massive communist union, which is affiliated to the CIA in the United States.
Interesting. Alrighty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsor, so stay tuned.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle, and we will take some calls at 800-313-9443. So please continue. Would you say that people like Irving Kristol and his son and the so-called neoconservative movement has anything to do with communism?
Yes, it does. A great deal, actually. Irving Kristol and his son, famously, of course, Israel apologists. There is quite a few, you see it quite a lot. In the 1950s, you see a lot of Jews, all of a sudden, with the advent of the claimed Soviet purge of the Jews and the removal by Stalin, regardless of whether it was supposed to be Jews or not, of a lot of leading Jews from positions in the, you had the Hungarian, you had the Polish, the Czechoslovakian parties, and within the Russian party itself, they began to sort of change, over from a position of socialism is wonderful and we can achieve it through Marxism and the Soviet Union, to a assumption of the other, the common Jewish way of thinking about this issue, because we have to understand that Marxism was not come up with in isolation in the Jewish community, because in the 19th century, when Marxism was becoming a very in vogue in the Jewish community, alongside that was Zionism, and you sometimes have a combination of the two, like you have the Poel Zion, who were Marxist Zionists, essentially. So neoconservatism took all its assumptions from Marxism got rid of Hegel and his then the idea of the Bible being Marx and how there was going to be a revolution, etc., and came in with the assumptions into a kind of Zionist ideology where you had the same ruthlessness expressed than you do in communism with the cadre concept. At the same time, Zionism and neoconservatism, as I've said, are fairly similar because they're both revanchist ideologies which seek to eliminate their opponent by physical means in various different ways. So they'll go somewhere and they will attack it as opposed to sit back and just wait to look to the good of your own people, etc. And in some respects, perhaps the best comparison you can make between Marxism and neoconservatism is to point out that, as I said, most neoconservatives started out life as Marxists and then took the lessons that they learned as part of the communist movement about discipline, about how to organize people, and all the methods and ideas that the communists had had and they had experience of during all those years, and all the networks they created, and they put them to use in a neoconservative way. So they began to use them as essentially, they used Marxism as a touchstone for their own ideology, which then began to borrow from the anti-Marxist thought and create a kind of hybrid. We see in other Marxist ideologies today, like what we call the New Left, where you combine Marxism and you say that Marx was wrong in some respects, and then you combine Marx with another set of ideas, and then you create a neo-Marxist ideology. It's a bit, as a bit like the New Left, a bit like the Fourth International, and so on and so forth. Neoconservatives did exactly the same thing, but they combined a lot of what Marx and Engels said with neoconservative authors like James Burnham and people like that, people who were devoutly anti-communist, but at the same time took a lot from their communist era. A great example of an early neoconservative authors that you mentioned who were Marxists was Eugene Lyons, who was a correspondent in the United States for TASS, which was a Soviet agency, and he went to the Soviet Union in 1937 and came back completely disillusioned with Marxism. And then by 1940, he wrote a book called The Red Decade, which attacked the 1930s and argued for a neoconservative solution way well before Irving Kristol had begun to do so. And again, with Marxists in general, we have a similar trend in that the main critical biographer of Che Guevara, the notorious Argentinian revolutionary, who was a bit like Marx himself, who's been positively written up in history when he really shouldn't have been. He was a similar boat to an awful lot of these neoconservative authors when he had come through Marxism, through this United States CPUSA, through a kind of socialism, and then to an anti-communist conservatism by about the time of Vietnam. And he advocated going into Vietnam and so on and so forth, in much the same way as his conservative ideologues were doing at the time. A good example being that was Walt Rostow, who wasn't a Marxist, didn't originate as one, but again, he was a Jewish ideologue who was a major figure in the background to the Kennedy and Johnson decision to go into Vietnam properly. He was the one who encouraged it from his own theories.
Right. Now, he was an advisor to both Kennedy and to Johnson.
So, yes. Yes, I think he was. He was a major figure in the whole Vietnam War thing.
Interesting. All righty. We will be back in 3 minutes, and we will take a call when we come back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Work
Berkey purification systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. Berkeys are used worldwide under normal, hostile, and emergency environments. Securing your access to good-tasting, sparkling, wholesome drinking water can be harder than you might expect. Water is often laced with chlorine, lead, high levels of harmful bacteria, and other unwanted chemicals and contaminants. Even bottled water can contain these contaminants, and moreover, it's expensive. Other purification systems are inferior. Most do remove pathogenic bacteria, and many remove the beneficial minerals that your body needs. Perhaps that's why Berkey systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. This simple, highly effective method of microporous, self-sterilizing, and recleanable black Berkey purification elements bring you the finest water purification system available anywhere. Call today, 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Free shipping for a limited time only.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Attention RBN listeners. The Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees. But we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
And welcome back. Let's go ahead and take a call. Let's take Werner in New Brunswick. Werner, welcome to the program. You have a question or comment?
I got a question and I got a few observations. And one of the observations is Marxism and communism, basically what prepared the way and the climate for them to take off was the exploitation of the worker during the Industrial Revolution. And it is odd that from the very same group that were exploiting the workers, they financed the writing of the Communist Manifest. They basically got the communist movement going. Same spring. Doesn't make sense to an ordinary human being.
Mm-hmm.
And about the Ukraine, basically the kulaks, they were farms, farmers, family farms. They were over a certain size. And they did not want to join the collective farm because they saw the waste and the foolishness that was going on there, waste of resources and not much results because they're basically party functionaries and bureaucrats were running the show. And towards the end of the Soviet Union, in the 70s, I read the statistics, and it was written that The collective farms, they only produce 60% of the food in the former Soviet Union, whereas where people had small plots, I think up to about an acre or an acre and a half, that represented about 2.5% of the total agricultural area. And they were producing 40% of the food on those small plots.
Okay.
So, so much for the benefit of this big communistic and Bolshevik experiment. You know, there's nothing, you know, if there's no personal initiative, you know, people won't apply themselves to it as much. You know,
okay, Carl, your comments.
I would say yes, he's completely correct. The only thing I would point out is he's quite correct in that the Marxist ideas come from there. Well, they gained the legitimacy in a time where there was great exploitation of the workers. But what is not usually stated is that those who are doing the exploiting were often actually Jewish themselves. As Werner implied, they were doing an awful lot of, for example, the sweatshops were often actually were Jewish labour being exploited by Jews, and you would also have Jewish landlords exploiting like Poles, for example. Example in Poland, the Jews formed basically the middle class essentially, and they cooperated with the aristocrats against the peasants and the peasants against the aristocrats, etc., etc. And that's why you have all the pogroms against them, because and they weren't state-sponsored things, as we now know. They were actually local. They were local things for people who were fed up with Jews, and fed up with the Jews, fed up with exploitation, and they went after them in a big, big way. The other thing I would sort of point out, and I completely agree with Werner when he says about the private enterprise and so on and so forth. The only thing I would point out, which would add to his point. He's probably unaware of, in the new economic program under Lenin, a lot of American communists went to the USSR, and they became capitalists, essentially. They began to run these corporations because they were supposedly highly qualified as Marxists. They came and they said, oh, yeah, we're going to run this like fishery. There's some fisheries, there's farms, there was factories, and these were poorly run. They took thousands and thousands of dollars at that time, a great deal of money, millions today, to keep up. The product was poor, and they profited massively. And a lot of them actually ended up leaving the Communist Party because they'd made so much money out of the revolution by going in there as communists and coming out as capitalists, which is kind of, again, it lacks a historian. The only historian I know who's talked about it in any detail is Sean McMeekin in his 2003 biography of Willy Munzenberg, The Red Millionaire. You can get it from Yale University Press. He talks about it at length and how this has been completely ignored by pro-Soviet, pro-communist historians, and only the anti-communist historians who fortunately are the majority these days, I hope they are anyway, are beginning to look at this issue. But the problem we've encountered, and so I'm sure everyone's probably aware if they've studied communism, is that Putin is beginning to close down all the archives to us. So we can't get all the information about what the communists actually did, if you like.
Well, that's why would he do that?
Because he wishes to rewrite
history
into being a Russian epic, if you will, in the context of Russian nationalism. I think that's what he's trying to do, because he's kicked out quite a few researchers in recent years who have been looking at things that would be detrimental to a really positive view of Russia, Russian history, in terms of the modern context. For example, the deportations and killings of the Volga Germans in the 1945-1946 era time.
Oh, and of course that's something that people really don't want to get out. Because
no.
They want to make the Germans the bad guys of World War II, correct?
Yes, and in Russian mythos, it is important, very important, that the Germans be continued to be seen as the really, really, really bad people, because so much is at stake in post-war history if they're not. If they're not regarded as the bad people, then You have no Germany today. You have no Israel. You have the Soviet Union is open to question a lot more because all of a sudden you no longer have that sort of the thing of you can accuse someone of being a fascist or fascist sympathizer, neo-fascist, or what have you, as the Soviets themselves often did with people after the Second World War.
All righty. Werner, did you have another question, comment?
I got another, information, whatever. There's one guest on frequently. It was Rick Adams, and at one time he used to have his own show on RBN, George Messaros, Hungarian George.
Oh, right, right.
And he has a wealth of information about the historical background and about the industrialization, and especially in the armament industry that was started up and supported, greatly supported, with technology and funds and equipment from American industrialists in the 30s. And those industries, when they're talking about Auschwitz and the factories there, it is just a pittance compared to what happened to the workers, who were mostly people from the that were sent to the gulags, you know, and the casualties there. It was just horrendous. And as I say, George Messaros, he got a wealth of information. He has done a lot of research, you know. And when I listened to it, a lot of it rang a bell because I've heard the stories when I was growing up over there in Germany from people who had been in the prison camps, you know, and about the conditions. But Mr. Messaros, he got a lot of these statistics and everything, you know. And as I say, those are human beings that were the victims. But nonetheless, the statistics are very important that people can get the grasp of the atrocities that have been done to humanity under the communist system in the Soviet Union.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Werner.
Yeah, and as I say, you know, you get a wealth of information, and, you know, it would be pretty good sometimes if you maybe ask him to be a guest on your show.
All righty. Good suggestion. Thank you so much.
You're back.
All righty. We have an email question. Was the Triangle Shirt Factory fire in New York City a false flag for the formation of the Garment Workers Union?
I haven't studied that particular, the Garment Union, in any serious detail. So I can only go on what I know about similar cases where we have the Communist Party in that particular regard. But it wouldn't surprise me. The Communist Parties and the Communist groups in general were at this time particularly active in the US with the unions. There was the IWW, you had the International Workers of the World, which was led by later communist leaders like William Dead Foster. Earl Browder was involved. And these were men who would go around the United States and deliberately cause strikes, mayhem. They would sabotage things. They would do anything essentially to create worker consciousness was their idea, and so on and so forth, to create this revolution that they thought would happen and never did because they never could get enough people to believe in what they said. The only reference I can think of in terms of a similar strike in Europe would be the Match Girl strike in London, where you had a large workforce who were incited by essentially trained speakers and people who was serving the communist cause to rise up against the factory owners and essentially effectively overturned a lot of legislation, a lot of positive advancement for workers in the name of this revolutionary idea that would destroyed a lot of the worker gains and created this idea of the Red Menace and so on and so forth that became so prevalent at the time. So no, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that was the case. I tend to think that the term false flag is banded around a bit too much, but if you're looking for a modern way of describing it, I'd say yes, that's very true. It is literally, it could well have been a false flag scenario where they did something in order to get work conscious, and it wouldn't be the first time we know of them doing it in Germany. We know of them doing it in Spain. A great example is the Abraham Lincoln Brigade in Spain, 1936, where they where the Communist Party and Communist International paired this brigade of anarchists, socialists, communists, and so on and so forth, who all went to Spain to fight against the against Franco. And the Communist Party, Communist Intelligence, used this as a opportunity while they were doing this to kill off all their opponents in the American labor movement. Exactly the same scenario. They went through this list and they went through a list of people and they began killing them off systematically. If they didn't die in combat, they were just killed off systematically. And then when they went back to the United States, all the effective organizers basically gone. They'd all been killed. And the head of that, you know, I forget his name offhand, was again Jewish. And again, it's just one of these things that you don't read much in history, history books. And you find that the communists in particular were very keen on creating scenarios where they felt they would be at advantage. So they would have a popular front call, of course, like say this fire would cause a strike or something because it killed someone or blah blah, and then they would move in, control the union, have the union as a big as the Communist Party, so they could then gain more members, more prestige, more influence in the CIO, and so on and so forth, and that way they would begin to grab hold of industrial organizations. Thus getting rid of what they would call rights deviationist opposition, people who didn't believe in Marxism, basically, but believed in some kind of socialism, and forced the MPIC to create a dichotomy between, you have the reactionaries, people on the right, and the people on the left, and the people on the left would be controlled by the Communist Party. So, yes, I would agree that may well have been the case.
All righty. Let's take another caller. Let's take Ed from Utah. Ed, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, Deanna. Your guest seems to have a theory that goes, which I agree with, which goes quite along with the Michael Collins Piper view of the split schism in communism with the Trotskyites and the Marxists or the Leninists. And to that end, you had, for example, William F. Buckley, Jr. there with his big National Review. Well, the longtime editor was none other than the actual translator and chief spokesman for Leon Trotsky himself. And so here you had these people leading the conservative movement of the 50s, sort of as a stalwart against the burgeoning John Birch Society at the time there. Not that they were not controlled either, but there was a lot of true believers in there, true definite conservatives that needed to be corralled, if you know what I'm saying. And so you had this split in communism, the internationalist Trotskyites, and Piper talked specifically about the Federalist Society, that Bill Kristol, who's on Fox a lot now, his father was a card-carrying member of the Communist Party, Irving Kristol. And Irving Kristol, he was part of what Piper describes as a transmogrification of these, many of these Marxists that were like Congressman Lowenstein, which actually funneled money to John Kerry from Massachusetts to be a supposed anti-war protester. They were CIA assets, and Lowenstein led this charge. So there was a transmogrification of these Marxists, Deanna, into the new conservative fold or new neoconservative, and that's the origin of that neocon. A label that is so accurate now. Well, what do you say to that, sir, or Deanna?
Carl.
I would say yes. I would say you're right, completely.
Yeah,
I would actually add some names to your list. Some classic ones would be Arthur Koestler, as I'm sure you know, was the author of The 13th Tribe. He also wrote a book in 1952 called The Yogi and the Commissar, which effectively argued basically along the lines that you're talking about, where he was a communist, a card-carrying member of the CPGB, and he then became a conservative after the Second World War, and then became a big figure in the right wing anti-communist thing groups. Exactly the same with some Gentile authors, like for example Louis Bidens, was a major communist figure, editor of the Daily Worker, and so on and so forth. He became a right wing commentator. James Burnham is another one.
Yeah.
Sam Francis's favorite author, one of mine actually.
Right. It explains why big liberals like Roger Ailes could finance a Rush Limbaugh back in the late 80s.
Yeah. All righty, gentlemen, we do have to cut to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees. Just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 0232.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experience process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous-based metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, and metal expansion and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate on itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphite. It also offers the tremendous benefit of being non-toxic. It is used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Welcome back. Our guest today has been Carl Rattle, and I believe that Ed is still on the line. But, Carl, you need to tell us about how to get your book, Communism and the Jews, before the end of the program. Ed, did you have another comment?
So I'll wrap up here, Deanna. This almost explains what I'm hearing today, the old concept of that the far right is a tool of the far left. When you have Limbaugh controlled by Roger Ailes, when you have all of these, you have Mark Levin out there now, and these people that you know were Marxists back in the 60s and can be proven, and here they are sounding like conservatives, talking about the Constitution even at times, and yet pushing the wars for Israel, pushing the wars for you see, big oil, when oil's involved, Deanna, it's for the payoff. That's the payoff to the Bush-type people and the Bush-Cheneys out there. They're not really ideological. They're kind of money dumb, and they're used in that regard. But that's what I had to say.
Okay. Thank you so much. Carl, your comments.
I'd say, yeah, he's completely right. He probably wasn't unaware of... if you read an awful lot of work by Marxists at the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you'll find exactly the same thing. They would use people, they would use fronts, they would use companies to funnel large amounts of money, get lots of money. They would use people, they would say the same basic things as Rush Limbaugh, but they'd say it in a different way. They'd say the Constitution says this. For example, they opened the Jefferson School of Political Science in New York. That was basically a communist school, but it used Jefferson's work to claim that he was basically a communist, that it was in the American tradition, and so on and so forth. The same is put forward in William Dead Foster's book of 1939, Toward a Soviet America, and so on and so forth. It's you see it constantly in their work, and he's quite right.
All righty. Now, how do our listeners get your book, Communism and the Jews?
Well, the easiest way for the moment is to contact me directly at semitic.controversies@gmail.com. If they just let me know, I'll direct them to my publisher, because I can't remember for the life of me remember their website, what their website address is, sorry. I also drop an email to my publisher on their behalf, let them know this person's interested, and my publisher will contact them when the book is out.
Okay,
I've already
and that is semitic.controversies@gmail.com.
Yeah, just email me there. I'm quite happy to respond to any questions or thoughts, of anything like that. I'm quite happy to talk to people about them or give people references to what I said today, anything like that.
All right. Happy to do so. What do you think of Arthur Koestler's book? Is it right on, or is that kind of a... What do you think of it with his 13 tribes?
It's wrong. if your readers think it's correct, I would recommend reading Kevin Allen Brooks' 2003, The Jews of Khazaria.
Right.
Talks about, Koestler's kind of, he was right for the time he wrote it, but recent genetic studies and advances in our understanding of the Khazar issue have indicated that he's correct.
All righty. Well, we're out of time. Carl, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Lovely, lovely. I love being on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope you'll come back.
I will, quite happily.
All righty. Bye-bye, listeners. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care.
The next round.